Today, what damage has Donald Trump's presidency done to the environment? And would Joe Biden be any better? In an almost pitch-black space, deep underground, a group of men dressed in dark overalls and white hard hats were watching as huge machines cut away at the rock, forming chunks of coal that glistened under the light from their head torches.
Now here, this is the head gate. We do some work on the shear and stuff, so we cut a little bit higher here so we have some room to maneuver around.
This way of extracting energy from the earth is centuries old. But in April 2017, the new head of the USA's Environmental Protection Agency was here in the heart of mining country in Pennsylvania to look towards the future.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Scott Pruitt had been chosen by the then new president, Donald Trump, to lay out his government's vision for the environment. And he was about to promise that the war on coal was over.
The regulatory assault is over. We're going to partner together. And I thank you for the hospitality today. Thank you very much.
Back up at the surface, a crowd of journalists gathered to listen to Pruitt speak. Among them was Emily Holden, an environment reporter for Guardian US.
Everyone expected the Trump government to be incredibly friendly to fossil fuels. Trump campaigned on saving coal jobs. You know, he had bumper stickers that said Trump digs coal. And everyone knew that the oil and gas companies and coal companies were supporting his campaign. But it really took seeing who he was going to put in these cabinet positions to understand just how systematically the Trump government was going to start to roll back all of these environmental protections that have been put into place over years, all of these efforts to stem the global climate crisis. So seeing Scott Pruitt, who had sued the EPA more than a dozen times, at a coal mine, saying he wanted to be a partner, I think that was really a moment where I realized, okay, this is going to be a really fast-paced 3.5 years, and everything is going to change.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, Donald Trump and the climate crisis. Emily, it's pretty clear that when you were stood there in Pennsylvania back in 2017, watching Scott Pruitt as the new administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, you thought that something really significant was going on. How important is that appointment?
The EPA appointment is huge, especially in this moment in time where the country is battling over the future of fossil fuels. Scott Pruitt is the former attorney general from Oklahoma, a big oil and gas state, and he had sued the EPA more than a dozen times.
The Obama-era rule, known as the Clean Power Plan, aimed to significantly cut carbon emissions from the nation's power plants by 2030. The goal? Reduce emissions by a third of 2005 levels. But utility companies and more than two dozen states' attorneys general sued, including Scott Pruitt, who was the Oklahoma AG at the time.
He is from this like very right wing of the conservative party in the U.S. that believes essentially that the federal government shouldn't have a role in telling states how to protect the environment. And picking Scott Pruitt was really a way for Donald Trump to say, we don't like anything that this agency has done. We're starting over from scratch. We're going to put the guy in charge who is an expert on all of its weaknesses, and we're going to have him systematically start rolling all of these rules back.
What powers did Pruitt have in that job, and how did he start to use them?
There are two main rules that the U.S. had written specifically to try to address the climate crisis. Scott Pruitt came in, and those were the two things that he wanted to get rid of first. Rolling back a rule called the Clean Power Plan, which was the federal government's plan for getting states to make their electricity sector cleaner. So it basically said, each state has a goal, you decide what you're going to do, but make sure that your power plants don't pollute as much as they do. You need to ratchet it down over time. They threw that out.
President Trump has repeatedly pledged to unwind many of former President Obama's signature policies, including the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions.
They also took rules that were supposed to make cars more efficient, which largely a lot of auto producers were supportive of, and decided that new cars didn't need to be that much more efficient, that they didn't need to get more miles per gallon, and that automakers didn't need to meet those standards.
How did people working inside the EPA feel about all of that?
EPA staffers' morale was just at an absolute all-time low because you have people who have been working on these standards for decades even. This is their life's work. And now they have a boss who's telling them, I hate everything that you've done. You need to help me write rules to take this all back. And that was just so demoralizing for people who really care about the environment. They aren't in this job for the money or the prestige. They're in it because they want to make things better for how Americans live. And at the same time, you have all of the climate advocates and environmental advocates. I think most of them realized when President Trump won election that they weren't going to have any sway whatsoever with the federal government.
What do you think the world should be doing about climate change? And do you still harbor that skepticism?
I feel that the United States has tremendous wealth. The wealth is under its feet. I've made that wealth come alive.
I think people quickly understood this is not an administration that we can work with. And the agency itself would say that's not true at all. We're just trying to make things more reasonable for industry, and this will still be protective of Americans. But EPA has over and over and over again ignored science and instead done what it is that businesses want them to do.
Wow, and all that was underway even before the moment where I guess the rest of the world sat up and really took notice of what was happening. As we know, the US had signed the Paris Agreement in 2016, promising to massively cut emissions over the following decade.
Today's a historic day in the fight to protect our planet for future generations.
In October that year, Barack Obama stood up in the Rose Garden and said, this treaty on climate crisis, which was hard fought for, could be a shot at saving the planet.
Today, the world meets the moment. And if we follow through on the commitments that this Paris Agreement embodies, history may well judge it as a turning point for our planet.
And then less than a year later, in June 2017, in that same beautiful setting outside the White House, Donald Trump took a very different turn. Tell me what happened.
A couple months after Scott Pruitt visits that mine in Pennsylvania, the president has been getting lobbied by these essentially conservative think tanks. And he goes to the Rose Garden and he says, we are initiating the process to leave the Paris Agreement.
I am fighting every day for the great people of this country. Therefore, in order to fulfill my solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw.
The U.S. is out. We think this was a bad deal. We think we can get a better deal. And this would be bad for our economy, and we don't want to participate.
Thank you.
How significant is that? How big a polluter is the U.S.? And if it stalls in all these areas, what does that mean for global emissions?
The U.S. is the biggest historical emitter of climate pollution ever. Number one on the list, even though we have a very small portion of the world's population. We're not currently the biggest emitter right now, that's China, but we've caused most of the problem. And the rest of the world sees that and they say, you did all of this pollution, you created this issue while your economy was growing. And now while our economies are growing, you want us to slow down. That's not fair. So if the U.S. isn't willing to come to the table and say, we will make sacrifices too, other countries are not going to be as willing. The thing about the Paris Agreement is that it's voluntary. So even though Trump says this would be awful, it would hurt the economy, the U.S. does have the flexibility to do it the way that they want to do.
So if Trump could have done what he wanted anyway under Paris, why did he pull out?
Trump pulled out really as a show of support to the oil and gas industry.
And clearly he took ownership for this. But how important was Pruitt?
Pruitt was very vocal about wanting to leave the Paris Agreement and was pushing the White House on it.
Paris, truly. Paris at its core,
was a bunch of words committed to very, very minimal environmental benefits and cost this country a substantial amount of money and put us in an economic disadvantage.
Yes, sir. Later on, you saw U.S. officials from the Trump administration go to international meetings and say, we don't see anything wrong with fossil fuels. We think that they can be a part of this, which is just the opposite of everything that's supposed to be happening at these meetings.
For all of that, things were about to get rocky for Pruitt, weren't they?
They definitely were. You know, covering his EPA was just the wildest reporting experience that I've ever had. There was a time when every day, almost, there was a new story coming out about something controversial that he did. And I'm not talking about policy. I mean, the first really big news story that came out about him that made people start to think this guy is way too close with industry was that he had been renting an apartment on Capitol Hill from a fossil fuel lobbyist at below market rate.
And now a Fox News exclusive, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt firing back against critics as he fights to carry out President Trump's agenda. Political opponents are calling for his resignation over ethical issues.
And then he was also working on issues that would benefit that lobbyist.
This was like an Airbnb situation, Ed.
It's not. It's a block from the Capitol.
So he was getting a sweetheart deal in this apartment and at the same time doing things that their clients wanted to see done.
And another official was in the news this week, Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt, who's come under fire for questions about ethical infractions and excessive spending. This week, new questions have been raised about some of his international travel.
The news stories about Pruitt just kept coming. Everything from, you know, him insisting that his security detail turn on sirens to escort him from his apartment over to his favorite restaurant to get his favorite cheeseburger, to sending out his staffers to go find a particular lotion that his wife liked.
Pruitt is currently facing at least 11 investigations examining his first class travel, pay raises given to his staff, and money spent on security and office furnishings, including a $43,000 soundproof phone booth for his office. If you haven't heard about that one, it's because the booth is working.
You couldn't make this stuff up.
You really couldn't. And I think there was just a breaking point for the Trump administration when they were like, look, you know, he's doing all the things that we want him to do in policy, but this is just so distracting from our mission. This can't go on.
President Trump has just announced over Twitter that he has accepted the resignation of Scott Pruitt, his controversial...
So after months of pressure, Pruitt gets forced to resign. I imagine that environmentalists might be cheering that moment. Who came next at the EPA?
Well, they would be, except that the next person in line, his name is Andrew Wheeler. Well,
thank you for being with us, Mr. Wheeler. President Trump has indicated his belief that climate change is a hoax, perhaps perpetrated by the Chinese. Do you agree?
Well, I believe that climate change is real. I believe that man has an impact on it. And
President has said that climate change is a hoax. Do you agree with him?
I've not used the hoax word myself.
I see.
He has a lot of experience in government and the D.C. lobbying world. He's actually a former coal lobbyist.
A coal lobbyist?
That's right. Yes, he's lobbied for a coal company previously. And he just gets things running a little smoother for the deregulation mission that they have here. They work on finalizing these proposed rules for power plants, for cars. They roll back rules on regulating bodies of water in the U.S. They roll back rules on coal ash.
Should the American people have confidence that you're going to help us deal with this global crisis?
Yes, they should have confidence because we are moving forward to reduce CO2.
They freeze rules on air pollution standards. They take the scientific advisory committees and they remake them. They take some of the independent scientists off and they put people on who have worked for industry, who've worked for conservative states.
That is extraordinary.
Yeah. So the Trump administration says we think these science committees that advise the government haven't been balanced. And so they start putting people in their place who have been working for conservative states or working in industry historically. So it really puts us in an unfortunate position internationally where, you know, we're an embarrassment to countries who are working on this seriously.
To what extent is Trump driving all of this? What is his motivation when it comes to the environment?
It's so difficult to assess Trump's intent on any kind of policy, but especially climate policy. Before he's president, he calls it climate change a Chinese hoax. And while he's president, his White House never gives a really clear statement on what he thinks about it. It's just not an issue for him. What is an issue for him is helping fossil fuels.
Last year at Davos, he even was seen to be mocking Greta Thunberg.
Our house is still on fire. Your inaction is fueling the flames by the hour.
I mean, a 16-year-old over her position on the climate.
But to embrace the possibilities of tomorrow, we must reject the perennial prophets of doom and their predictions of the apocalypse.
I think it is really worth focusing on her for a minute, because everything he's doing comes at a pretty special moment, many would think, in terms of the environment. She, of course, led that massive uprising in the face of growing catastrophe across the world.
People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing.
What do we want?
Climate action! What do we want?
It now!
This is a climate emergency. That's why we are here.
I had an exam today and I've come all the way from Noida to join this protest because I feel this issue is very pressing and we need to take action.
The young people want to be heard. Like, we haven't had our say and it's going to affect us.
We are in the beginning of a mass extinction and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
Has all of that shifted the mood and the conversation in America?
Absolutely. At the same time that you have Trump rolling back all of these rules for the environment, getting out of the International Climate Agreement, doing everything that he can to help fossil fuels, you see a lot of people in the U.S., especially young people, increasingly really worried about climate change.
Hundreds of activists occupied House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi's office on Tuesday, demanding action on climate change. 51 were arrested.
All of our local politicians have the chance to do something about this. They have a chance to stand with the Green New Deal, and they have a chance to fight for our futures.
But you even had a youth advocacy group called the Sunrise Movement.
We are going to be building the largest youth political force this nation has ever seen.
And they're now in a position of political power where they're actually kind of advising what the Joe Biden campaign is considering to do on climate change.
We had to improve and increase the ambition that Joe Biden was putting forward on his climate plan. And so we pushed and we won some pretty significant victories.
Has that pressure had an impact? What's Biden offering on the environment as we enter the final stretch of this election campaign?
Joe Biden has said he would immediately rejoin the Paris Agreement and that he wants to eliminate greenhouse gas emissions from the U.S. by 2050.
And a lock-in progress that no future president can roll back or undercut to take us backward again.
Which is pretty good. You know, that's what scientists say that the entire world needs to do in order to avoid the worst of climate change.
Science requires a timetable for measuring progress on climate that isn't three decades or even two. Science tells us we have 9 years before the damage is irreversible.
Overall, environmental advocates are pretty happy with what Joe Biden has put forward. He actually made his plan a lot stronger. He agreed to try to eliminate emissions from the electricity sector by 2035, which would be a very quick pace. But then when you think about it, since the U.S. is the biggest historical emitter and other countries probably can't do as much as we can, we need to do that even faster. He is not willing to be very aggressive publicly with fossil fuels. Joe Biden says that he would not ban fracking, which has led to this really big drilling boom in the United States for natural gas. You know, Joe Biden wants to incentivize renewable energy. He wants to create jobs. He says his climate plan is a jobs plan. He is providing all these incentives, retrofitting buildings, putting charging stations for electric vehicles around the country. But he doesn't want to penalize fossil fuels.
Coming up, how to tackle the climate crisis without angering the fossil fuel industry. Emily, it's clear that Joe Biden is facing a real challenge here. On the one hand, Donald Trump is claiming that the Democrats' plan could cost livelihoods.
Biden has promised to abolish the production of American oil, coal, shale, and natural gas, laying waste to the economies of Pennsylvania, Ohio, Texas, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Colorado, and New Mexico, destroying those states, absolutely destroying those states and others. Millions of jobs will be lost, and energy prices will soar.
That's a message that may well chime with people in a state like Pennsylvania, where you began this story and where a lot of people work in the mining industry. Biden is trying to respond to that with his own economic arguments.
It's not only a crisis, it's an enormous opportunity. An opportunity for America to lead the world in clean energy and create millions of new, good-paying jobs in the process.
And clearly, he's also facing pressure from the left of the party, from people like Bernie Sanders.
In terms of climate change, we face an existential threat, not only here in America, but around the world.
And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
This is not an elitist issue. This is a quality of life issue.
How does he respond to their arguments around radical policies like a Green New Deal?
He's involving them in his plans. So in rewriting his climate plan, he had this unity task force with Bernie Sanders supporters. And he also worked with some of the staffers who had put together some of the strongest climate plans from his competitors in the Democratic primary. And so a lot of these people, because they are actively working on this plan with him, they are supporting it, even though they think it has some shortfalls.
What shortfalls do they think it has?
They want him to say specifically when we're not going to have coal power in the U.S. anymore. They want him to say specifically when we won't drive vehicles that run on gasoline. I think what's hard for politicians in the U.S. to do is to say fossil fuels will end. No one wants to say that publicly running for an election where they might have to get some votes from moderates.
Votes from people in important swing states like Pennsylvania, where you began this story, in a coal mine. Presumably, Joe Biden is worrying about voters in areas like that.
Right, and it's not just coal miners in places like Pennsylvania. It's the oil and gas industry, which has just absolutely exploded there. And while Biden has a lot of support from some of the big unions, like the electrical workers and auto workers, people who are working on things like pipe fitting, things that are central to natural gas, are a lot more worried about the future of their industry under a President Joe Biden.
Essentially, to environmentalists, what you're saying is Joe Biden has a package that looks quite good, but not as good as they would hope, because he's really worried about this particular group of people. Are there reasons to be hopeful that he might move further in the direction that they want him to?
Absolutely, because when you look at how much has changed over the past few years in U.S. politics and also in our understanding and awareness of the climate crisis, the plan that Biden has put forward, no one could have imagined a major candidate putting forward even a couple of years ago. I keep thinking about this interview that I had with Lonnie Stevenson, who is the president of the Electrical Workers Union in the U.S., and they're endorsing both Biden and his climate plan. And what he told me is, you know, when we decided to do this, we knew we would lose members. We knew a lot of people wouldn't like it. But the transition is happening. You know, we have people who are members who work in coal plants who have lost their jobs. We know where this is headed, and we want to be at the table and figuring out what happens to us in the future. So if we're going to start losing oil and gas jobs, we want to be a part of that discussion, too. And he says the only reason that he can support Biden is because Biden won't say that he wants to ban fracking, and that Biden is open to things like capturing carbon from fossil fuel plants and keeping nuclear plants running.
Given the people that Donald Trump has put in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency, given the regulations that have been wound back, given the decision over the Paris Agreement, how bad have the past 4 years been for the environment?
Well, for the climate problem, they've been about as bad as they could be from the U.S. government. And we've basically seen that we've continued to have emissions reductions, but they're set to just totally flatline. And the next president, if it's Joe Biden, he will have to really work very quickly, not just to write new regulations and issue executive orders and try to reverse the things that Trump has done, but to work with Congress to get substantial legislation underway, too.
Okay, so in some ways, the world has changed in a direction that is positive for the environment. But on the other hand, 2020 has brought a huge shock to the entire world. We've had the COVID crisis, economies across the world totally shut down, many factories closed, people stopped driving, planes were grounded. In the early days of that, people were thinking maybe the one silver lining to this is that it will have this great impact on the environment. But is the reality that COVID has just shown us how hard the task ahead is?
Absolutely, because look, if we're going to have really extensive climate action, you don't want to do it the way that we've seen the COVID crisis unfold here. You don't want to shut down everything at once. And even though we've seen emissions drop significantly, 4.6% according to one study, even if we did that every year for 10 years, it wouldn't be enough, according to what scientists say that we need to do. We would need to cut emissions 7% per year just to reach reasonable climate goals. So what we've learned from the COVID crisis is even if you're going to shut down like virtually huge chunks of the economy for an extended period of time, that's still not enough for the problem that we're facing.
It's almost unbelievable. If a shutdown that is this extensive isn't going to do the job, then I'm afraid it does leave me feeling a bit pessimistic. It sounds as if this is almost insurmountable.
Yes, it's pretty easy to get pessimistic about this, but you have to do it the right way so that you're not just shutting down the economy and putting people out of work. So you don't just shut down coal mines and shut down, you know, oil and gas drilling. You create more jobs in installing solar panels and installing wind turbines, but also in more permanent fields like retrofitting buildings, things that could last decades, jobs that would pay well and be unionized and be attractive to people who are going to be put out of work.
So what you're saying is that when it comes to the environment, what the American people decide on Tuesday, November the 3rd, is extraordinarily important.
It's hugely important, not just for America, but for the rest of the world. It's the biggest problem that the international community has ever faced. We know that it is much tougher on people who are poor, who aren't as able to easily adapt. So if we don't start to fight the climate crisis seriously, we aren't going to be able to do it. We have already seen warming 1 degree Celsius. We're on track for more than 3 degrees Celsius. That is catastrophic in the way that we live on this planet. And this election is going to have a huge impact on whether we can slow that down or just soar past it.
Emily, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Emily Holden. Do follow her brilliant reporting at theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore. Sound design was by Nicholas Cox. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. We'll be back tomorrow.